Well, good morning, Bridgeway. It's great to see you here today. It's so nice to be back. I also want to welcome those of you who are joining us online, church at home. I got to take just a quick second before I jump into today's message and say it's just good. It's good to be back here with you. Last weekend, was unable to preach. I had some exposure to COVID, and I just wanted to tell you, Pastor Justin got up here and gave a fantastic message last weekend, and he did it on like almost no notice whatsoever. I called him on a Friday night. I'm sure he's wondering why he took my call that Friday night, and he dropped everything and put together an awesome message. So could you put your hands together and thank Justin? So good. So good. Just crazy. I think that was like the sixth time I've been quarantined because of COVID exposure, and so I feel like freedom. I'm back among people, human beings. It just feels good to be back together. And kind of crazy. Let me ask you this. Get us thinking here for a moment. What's the craziest thing you've ever experienced or ever witnessed? Craziest thing you've ever seen, ever been through, maybe even the craziest thing you've seen someone else experience in life. All right, you got that thought in your head for a moment? Now I want to tell you a story that I think tops them all. I read this story, and this is the craziest thing I've ever heard of. It's a story about a young woman named Ada. She was 23 years old, and in 2015, she boarded a plane in Canada for a long trip to Tokyo. In the middle of the flight, her stomach began to hurt, not unexpected, probably the airplane food, she thought, but the pain kept growing. She looked down, and she noticed something was coming out of her body. This was no upset stomach. She was having a baby on an airplane. And here's the real kicker. She didn't even know she was pregnant. Now, I'll tell you this. I've had the joy of experiencing five of my children, delivery and coming into the world. And I got to tell you, I've always played a really, really important role in those moments, like running to the maternity ward to, you know, get ice chips for my wife and then telling my wife to do what she already knows how to do. Breathe, honey. You know, it's hoo, hoo, hee, hee, ha, ha, you know, that kind of thing. Really, really important stuff. And every labor and delivery I've been a part of has always had months to prepare for and always took place in a sterile environment with trained professionals, not for poor Ada. Her baby came when she was in the economy section, 8C, where there's no legroom and where flight attendants bump your arm continually with the snack cart. Needless to say, this was unexpected. Thankfully, there were doctors and professionals on board on the flight, and somewhere over Russia, Ada and her boyfriend became parents of a healthy child, and to the shock and awe of their parents in Tokyo, they instantly became grandparents. Now, I gotta tell you, life has kind of this way of throwing things at us that just are unexpected. I mean, many of us come to moments in life that are completely unexpected. Maybe you've experienced some of them, an unexpected job loss, didn't see it coming. Or an unexpected illness, or unexpected loss of a loved one. Maybe you've gone through some things relationally, and you experienced maybe a breakup unexpectedly, or a divorce, didn't see it coming. And I want to tell you this morning that I think life from the time we're born till the time we leave this earth has these moments that are unexpected. And how you deal with those moments will largely shape your relationship with God and your spiritual life. I got to tell you, of all the things I've heard, I've learned as a pastor that sort of nothing is out of bounds when it comes to what people have had to deal with in life. And of all the things that people have shared with me, I would say, by far and away, the thing that I've heard the most that people have experienced and didn't expect it is to come into a season where they just say simply, "Pastor, you know, I didn't expect to be sad. Or I didn't expect to be struggling with my emotions." Or just to be really point blank, people that have shared with me, "Pastor, I didn't expect to be depressed." And I thought it would be really good in this series, especially coming off of 2020, that we just take some time this morning to sort of have a mental reset. And I want to talk to you today about the number one, the leading cause of mental health concerns in our world today, and that is depression. I'll be honest with you, it goes without saying, you look at the statistics, and depression has a chokehold on our society. So many people struggling and trying to get through it, and yet, if I'm honest, oftentimes it's a subject that no one wants to talk about. No one wants to admit it, and no one, when someone admits it to them, really knows what to do and how to help that person who's struggling with their emotions. In fact, I know, especially in a place like this, it's hard for Christians to talk about mental health. It's hard for people to say, hey, you know, I'm struggling, and not hear something, even in a Christian community, that could sound sort of cliche. Like, well, maybe you need to pray about it more. Or maybe you need to have more faith. In fact, I know a lot of pastors that don't even want to touch this subject because of the shame and the stigma that comes with depression. And so I thought today it'd be really good if we talked about that from a Christian perspective, from a biblical perspective, on how we deal with this. And I want to really have us kind of unmask and kind of open up this conversation. So today, how do we overcome depression? And I chose those words very carefully. How do we overcome depression? Because Paul would say in the New Testament that if any part of the body of Christ suffers, then we all suffer. And so to me, this is very much an opportunity for the church to be about community and healing of anyone who might be struggling kind of with their mental condition. I got to tell you, I've dealt extensively with people who felt that, who felt like they're struggling and no one understands. They feel down or they feel depressed. I work with great counselors. I have a great group of referrals that I use. I'll say too, just personally, I've dealt with it in my family. My mom, who had a lot of struggles and passed away a few years ago, dealt with depression. And I can remember growing up as a kid and all the way through college that there would be times when my mom just couldn't even get out of bed for like a week at a time. And so I've seen it firsthand, and again, I think it's important that we talk about this from a Christian, biblical perspective. If you're here today or you're watching online, and part of the reason you don't feel like you're living this whole life, this best life possible that Jesus offers, because you're struggling, you're going through this battle, I want you to know that we are here for you. We mean that as a church. We're here for every single person, and we want to be available. And so whether it's myself or Pastor Justin, or Pastor Mike or Dan or anyone on our staff, we want you to know we are here. You are not alone. So let's kind of open this up a little bit and let's try to learn really what depression is and how it affects so many people. First of all, let's just start with the definition. Depression is defined as a temporary feeling of exaggerated sadness. Now, what makes depression really so difficult is it comes in so many varieties and so many different types of depression. You can kind of have on the most severe forms, you can have manic and bipolar depression. You can have depression that's just sort of associated with stage of life, whether it be you're having a baby and you can feel down, or you just had a baby, postpartum, baby blues, very common. You can have seasonal affective disorder, where we just don't see the sun hardly at all for months on end. In fact, this week I counted two times. I don't know if you saw it. Big, giant yellow thing in the sky. Two times this week, and both times. Once I was inside and I ran outside as quick as I could. I just stared at the sun, like burn my retina. Just bring it, you know, just bring it on. And then yesterday, the sun was out for almost most of the day. It was just so nice to have just sunshine and just to kind of feel that. You can have seasonal affective disorder. A lot of people suffer from what's called just simple mood depression. And simple mood depression would last probably from anywhere from a day of feeling sad to maybe upwards of a week. We get kind of beyond that and we start to classify it as clinical depression if someone feels sad for upwards of a month. If you're dealing with it, or if someone you love is dealing with it, kind of the signs, things to watch for are irritability, sudden weight loss, sudden weight gain, feelings of just feeling hopeless, feeling worthless, feeling like there's no value. And then the thing that I've noticed probably the most is someone just having a hard time getting moving, getting motivated, getting even up, usually associated with a lot of sleepiness and lots of naps. I'll tell you why this is so important. In marriages, it's been found that if one person is depressed, it is 9 times more likely that that couple can end in divorce. You look at some of the categories of just depression in our day, and teen girls, ages 12 to 19, teen girls, age 12 to 19, have said that that is their number one concern, is feeling sad, feeling depressed. And also, probably the area that's been overlooked for many years is male depression. In fact, they find finding that middle-aged men are exhibiting a huge rise in depression, just a major, major spike. So guys, we got that going for us too in our middle ages. But it's something to kind of be aware of and to watch out for. It's really been evident during this pandemic. It's just brought it out of the woodwork. 1 in 5 people will deal with depression, meaning if you haven't, you still might, or probably more likely, someone that you love will have to deal with it. 300 million people globally struggle. It is by far and away the number one mental health issue by far. Let me ask you, are you feeling depressed yet this morning? You feeling it? Well, that is not the point. In fact, the point is to find the hope in what God offers to anyone who's feeling that way. And so I want to look at one story in the Bible. I want to look at one man's journey through a process of coming out of a season, a real dark season of depression. And that story is found in 1 Kings chapter 19. I'd love it if you could follow along in your Bible, as well as I'll have the words on the screen for you too. But when you come to 1 Kings 19, you meet a man named Elijah. And Elijah is, he's a rock star. I don't know how else to put it. I mean, he's a rock star prophet committed to God. He's kind of got it all going in the right direction. I mean, he's serving God faithfully, and he's seeing God do like amazing, crazy, weird miracle stuff in his life. And sort of everything he touches as a prophet just takes off for God's glory and God's greatness. And Elijah is coming to kind of the end of his earthly ministry. And he comes to this moment that is truly what you would call a mountaintop experience with God. He's literally standing on the top of a mountain, and he comes into conflict with these false prophets of the false god, the idol god, Baal. And there's 450 of these prophets of Baal, and then there's one, just little old Elijah, 450 versus one. And this is back in a time where maybe it's hard to understand, but God wars were really a big thing. Like, my God is bigger than your God, and I'll prove it to you. And so there becomes kind of this contest of which God is greater, Baal, the false god, or Elijah's one true God. And so Elijah says, well, let's have a little contest, and we'll build an altar, we'll put wood on it, and we'll both have a chance. We'll have a chance to pray to our God, and whatever God comes down in the most dramatic way to consume this altar, then that is truly the one true God. And so Elijah says, you can go first. So the false prophets of Baal, they build this altar, fill it with wood, and then they start to pray. And they pray, and they pray, and they pray, and it's like Baal is just out to lunch, doesn't answer. And so they get frustrated with Baal, and so they start crying and screaming and actually cutting themselves to try to become desperate for their god Baal. And still, not even a spark, no presence of Baal in this altar. And so Elijah says, okay, my turn, and he kind of takes it up a notch. And he says, all right, servants, douse the altar with water. So they pour buckets and buckets of water. Now it would just seem impossible to light the fire. And Elijah makes one very simple prayer, and it's essentially a prayer for God to make his presence known. And in one prayer, it's like a match to gasoline. It's like, boom, I mean, fireworks. And this huge consuming fire is without a doubt evident that Elijah's God is the real true God. And Elijah then is led by the Lord to slay these false prophets of Baal and purify the land. And I wish I could say to you, well, you know, that's the end of the story, and Elijah lived happily ever after. It was actually that moment that became his most difficult moment, because the queen of the land, Jezebel, was not too happy with what Elijah just did. She wanted the national religion to be following Baal, and so she wanted everyone to follow Baal, and this did not look good. And so she puts a death warrant out for Elijah. Kill and destroy Elijah. In fact, this is where we pick up the story, 1 Kings 19, verse 2. So Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah to say, may the gods deal with me, be it ever so severely, if by this time tomorrow I do not make your life like that of one of them, meaning dead. Elijah was afraid and ran for his life. When he came to Beersheba in Judah, he left his servant there while he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness. He came to a broom bush, sat down under it, and prayed that he might die. I have had enough, Lord, he said. Take my life. I am no better than my ancestors. Then he lay down under the bush and fell asleep. Now again, make sure you kind of see where this scene is at. I mean, Elijah's just had this mountaintop experience, and now he is down deep in a valley. And I think this is often how depression works. This is often how spiritual attacks happen. You have this great moment, this big spiritual breakthrough, and then in the very next moment, you find yourself feeling low. I can say I don't really struggle with depression, but every time I've ever felt sad, it's usually because of that. Something going really well and then just kind of being open to the enemy just attacking and making you feel down. But this is a servant of God. He is being used by God. I mean, he's got to have this awesome experience, but he's got all these markers of depression. He's fearful. He's running for his life. He's not eating. He doesn't want to live. I mean, I can't think of a more accurate description of depression. In fact, he even leaves his servant and he travels a day further all by himself into the wilderness. He's alone, he's desperate, and he wants his life to end. You might be wondering, how did he get here? I think a lot of times people look at depression, it's like, well, what did you do before you were sad? You know, what was kind of the precursor or the cause of your sadness? Did you do something wrong? Did you sin? Did you make a mistake? And you see in Elijah's life, that couldn't be further from the truth. None of that was the case. In fact, the first thing I would like to say and the first point I would like to make is that depression is not a sin. If you're here this morning and you feel like you're sad because of something you've done, depression is not the cause of sin. It doesn't mean you've sinned. In fact, exactly the opposite. This man is serving God faithfully, and God is not punishing him. Now, just so you don't think that Elijah is the only person in the Bible that's ever been depressed, just so you don't think that I like cherry-picked like the one example of depression, I want to read some verses for you because there are so many ways in which we see people struggle in God's word with depression. In fact, just a few of them that I wanted to kind of pick up on this morning, just a few verses. The first verse is from Psalm 88. This is written by someone anonymously. And he says, "Darkness is my closest friend." I mean, you hear those words, that could be anyone today could say those words, right? I mean, darkness is my closest friend. And this is written as a psalm and it's anonymous. This is a prayer to God. God, darkness is my closest friend. Or how about this one, Psalm 6. "All night long, I flood my bed with weeping." You know who wrote that? You know who said that? David. That's King David. "All night long, I flood my bed with weeping." David. David is this guy that the scriptures kind of point to as someone who's so confident, someone who's always kind of in charge. I mean, he's this young shepherd boy, and he's the only one that will step up in the front of the enemy lines and say, "Goliath, bring it." And he defeats Goliath, chops Goliath's head off, later defeats Saul. I mean, he is this king. He's a warrior. He's a poet. He seems to have everything going for him. And yet he struggled with depression all night long. "I flood my bed with weeping." This is what the Bible describes as a man after God's own heart, David. Another one, you could probably call him the depressed prophet, is Jeremiah. Very simply, "Why was I ever born?" That's pretty depressing, isn't it? Why was I ever born? And you know Jeremiah because Jeremiah's got that other verse, that verse that you really like. You know, Jeremiah 29, "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not harm you, plans to give you a hope and a future." That same guy wrote this. "Why was I ever born? God, why did you ever bring me into this world? God, why was I even put on this earth?" And you could go on and on. In fact, we could look at other stories. We could look at the story of Job. Job had a season of great depression. We could look at the slave servant girl Hagar, or Jonah, or Solomon. Even Paul, the great Paul in the New Testament, who went around all throughout the Roman Empire and planting all these little churches, leading all these people to faith. I mean, Paul, the guy who all he wanted to do was go to Rome, talk to Caesar about Jesus. That's all he wanted to do in his life. Even Paul said he had seasons of great despair. You could go on and on. There are great people all throughout the Bible who struggled with their emotions, struggled with their depression. And they couldn't seem to kind of pull themselves out of it without God's help. I find that in our world today, we just have so many people who fit that description. They're just struggling. They're wondering, why was I born? Why was I put on this earth? And you could read from lots of people and see this. In fact, one that's kind of been studied because of her music and because of her lyrics is a singer by the name of Billie Eilish. And you might know her. She kind of is the spokesperson for Gen Z of sort of all that is depressed. And I know many people have tried to kind of understand her. And actually, Christianity Today did an interview with her because she won a Grammy for her last album. And so they interviewed her, and this is what she said about her Grammy Award-winning album. She says this, she says, "We didn't think it would win anything ever. We wrote an album about depression and suicidal thoughts and climate change and being the bad guy, whatever that means, and we stand up here confused and grateful." I think that's so telling of this generation, confused and yet grateful, and maybe even trying to find someone that speaks their language, that understands them. I think there's so much we can learn and so much we need to tune in to the generation, kind of this younger group of young adults that are coming up. In fact, I've got 5 kids, and you know, whenever I'm in the car with one of my kids, I always try to kind of use that as an opportunity to just spend some time with them. All right, let's put the phones away and let's just talk. And you might wonder what it's like riding around in the car with a pastor. Like, is it constant like biblical, you know, Bible trivia or something? And trust me, it's not that. In fact, I think my kids get plenty of that. And so I was driving with my son this past week and just having a conversation about life, and I was telling him about this quote from Billie Eilish, and I was trying to ask him, like, "Hey, buddy, are you ever depressed?" He's a middle school kid, and, you know, "Do you ever struggle with that?" And his words were so telling. He says, "No, I don't, but so many of my classmates and friends at school are sad." And I said to him, like, "Well, what do you mean they're sad?" He goes, "I don't know. They just say, yeah, I don't really like my life." And I said, "What?" "Yeah, so many of my friends just say, yeah, I don't really like my life." And I said, "Well, what do you think they mean by that?" And my son was like, "I have no clue. Like, they look like they have a great life. I'm not sure what they wouldn't like about their life." And he probably meant, like, their possessions and the things they have. And, you know, he was probably trying to take, like, inventory that way. But we had this great conversation for just a few moments, because whenever someone says to you, "Yeah, I don't really like my life," that you should have sort of these lights going off on your dashboard, that's not good. Like, that's not something to dismiss, I'm telling my son, but that is something that you need to lean into, that is someone that could be crying out for help or needs someone to kind of help them understand, because they're confused and they aren't certain what that really even means. And I got to tell you, I think there's so much we can learn. There's kind of a youth culture, and then if I'm honest with you, I believe there's really this youth subculture of things going on that we really need to work hard to try to understand and to lean into as believers. In fact, when you look at the story of Elijah, I think that's exactly what God does. He begins to lean into what Elijah is going through. You pick back up this story in 1 Kings 19, verse 5 again. It says, "All at once an angel touched him and said, 'Get up and eat.' He looked around, and there by his head was some bread baked over hot coals and a jar of water. He ate and drank and then lay down again. The angel of the Lord came back a second time and touched him and said, 'Get up and eat, for the journey is too much for you.' So he got up and ate and drank. Strengthened by that food, he traveled 40 days and 40 nights until he reached Horeb, the mountain of God." I read this week, and I thought, this is just so interesting. God doesn't correct Elijah. He doesn't rebuke Elijah. In fact, God does something for Elijah that's so special. He just gives him space to heal, right? In fact, he gives him not only space, he gives him a time for rest, and even shows up with a pretty good lunch, right? Like some fresh baked bread, you know? And it's so good that it seems like Elijah, it's exactly what he needs. He sleeps, and then he has a big piece of bread. Probably not gluten-free either, like just a big piece of bread. And then probably a carb coma, he falls back asleep, and then he wakes up, and what does he do? He eats more. And this is part of the healing process. And then from there, it says that he gets moving. God gets him moving. He has this time of rest and food and then movement. And if you study depression, really even outside of the Bible, psychologists would tell you that these are exactly the things you need. You need diet and you need rest. And yes, you need to move. You need exercise. You need diet. You need good food going into your body. You need rest. And this has become so important. You're not just a quantity of rest, but you need a quality of rest. You need to go to bed at the right time and wake up at the same time every day. And then you need to get moving. I think in my experience, just caring for and trying to help people with depression, it's often this last one that's the hardest, just to get them moving, to get them up and going every single day. And you look at what Elijah goes through. God says, "Get up, get strengthened, and now start moving." And it becomes quite a move, right? I mean, God says, He's moving for 40 days and 40 nights. I mean, that's quite a hike. Like literally every day for 40 days, he is moving. And now he's climbing the mountain again, a different mountain, the mountain of God, Horeb. But this is the process. And Elijah's going to find himself back on top of another mountain. And he's in this cave still of depression. And God is going to show up in his presence, and there's going to be this presence of God that seems to be because of this earthquake and this wind and this fire. And then God is really going to speak to Elijah, his still small voice, just this whisper. It's this whisper that brings him through this. There's a whole process that we see. And I think there's some things that we can learn from this. The first thing I would say is that depression is a healing emotion. Now you read that and you think, come on, Pastor, that's crazy. Depression is a healing emotion. And you push back on that because honestly, all of us, we hate to do anything that has to deal with sadness, right? Like we don't want anything to do with someone feeling sad or feeling strife or struggle. And so we think, oh, that couldn't possibly be helpful. In fact, you probably say it all the time, right? Someone will come up to you and they'll say, man, I'm so sad. And what's the first thing you want to say to them? Oh, cheer up. Or don't worry, this won't last. You know, you'll get through this. Think about that. You'd never say that to someone who came up to you and said, hey, I'm so happy. I'm so joyful. You'd never say to them, don't worry, this won't last, right? Like, you'd never say that to them. We only say that when someone is sad because we hate it. We can't stand to be in sad skin. We can't stand it. And it even bothers if it's not, it bothers if it's someone else. Like, oh, get over it. You'll get over it. Like, please. And instead, depression is this emotion that can offer us healing. I love the church father Augustine. He said about our emotions, he said that they often function like smoke from a fire. That if you smell a little smoke, that, hey, something is burning. And, you know, you got to deal with that fire. Don't just kind of stuff that smoke down. Like, actually follow its trail because there's a fire that's starting. And I think so often we say with depression, well, just suck it up. You know, just kind of stuff it down. And instead, church fathers for centuries would say instead, that's a sign. It's a sign that something needs to be dealt with. There's a tension that needs your attention. I don't know if you've realized it, but I mean, I've come to a point in my life where it's just, you just can't be happy all the time. In fact, it's probably more natural if you have these seasons where you're happy and then you're just kind of normal. And then, yeah, you even go through some periods of sadness. They would say that that normal oscillation between times of real happiness and times of even being sad is normal human behavior. You can't be happy all the time. In fact, I was reading this article. It was kind of this idea of like, is there a way we can kind of engineer, that we can sort of biohack our happiness? Is there a place we can live? Is there a food we can eat? Is there the right number of hours to sleep? And basically, this sort of led down this path, and they didn't really ever answer the question. But these scientists did say that they think they found one animal, and it's not a human being, but one animal that appears to be happy all the time. You ever hear these little creatures called quokkas? They're kind of this the smaller version of a kangaroo. They're found only on these remote islands off the coast of Western Australia. Let me show you a picture. They think that these animals are happy all the time because they're always smiling. Are these guys just the greatest or what? I could look at these all day. You know what? In fact, I found myself like I was getting behind in my sermon prep because I found that they're not just smiling just randomly. They even smile when they sleep. Check this out. Like, this is one happy little creature, and really remote islands, and they don't get visited very often, but they actually like people. And if you're there, they'll come up to you. They really have this thing for technology and Instagram. They love selfies. Just love it. In fact, most of the internet is full of these pictures of selfies with quokkas. And the only thing is they become even happier, but they don't want you to leave them. In fact, they'll kind of lunge out at you if you try to leave them. Like, they become your best friend, you know? And here's the deal. We can't be like the quokka. We can't be happy all the time. But we can have the presence of God in every time, in every season, in every bout with depression that we have. We can have this joy of the Lord that's always present. If you've not heard anything else I've said today, I want you to know that God cares deeply about your mental health. I mean, God cares deeply about you as a whole being and your mental being as well. He cared for Elijah, he cared for David, he cared for Jeremiah, and the Lord will care for you as well if you let him. He will care for you and he will bring you through whatever it is that you're going through. Even if you feel like no one understands and you're going through this dark night of your own soul, that God cares and God will come alongside of you. I want to say two things in closing. I want to address kind of two groups of people here today. I want to first just say, if you're here or if you're online, and maybe you're here and you've struggled with depression for a long time, or maybe you walked in the door and you didn't really know what it was, but now you know that you've got some depression to deal with. I want you to know, as I've already said, that we are here for you as a church, that we are here to help be with you and care for you. And I want to say to you, if that's you today, then the number one thing you should do, you should make as your number one priority to have sometime, at least one moment throughout your day that is unhurried time with God. That you just have one moment at least, and I'm not going to prescribe 5 minutes or 10 minutes or 15 minutes or an hour, but one time that is unhurried, that the only intention is for you to spend time with God. I mean, you look at all of these people that we've read, and every one of them, the way they got through their depression is they drew closer to God. And they got into his word and God spoke to him. I think you need one unhurried time where you just simply sit in the presence of God. Maybe it's a time of just praying, of talking to God. Maybe it's a time of reading his word. I would say start in the Psalms. The Psalms are the prayer manual, the prayers of God's people back to God. And so maybe you just begin there. I would also say to you that it's also a time when you should not push people away, but instead to gather and draw people around you, to have people come closer to you, open up to others, even here in the church and people that you know and love, allow them to come into your life. We're starting a whole new batch of small groups here at the end of this month, and I know that's one of the ways in which God kind of works. He works through God's people to put community around him. And so I would say that. Second thing I would say is to the second group of people. The second group of people, you might be here today, and you might say, you know what, I don't deal with depression. I'm not struggling with depression, but I know someone who is, or a family member is, or someone I love in my home is struggling. And if that's you here today, you might find yourself sort of at this end of yourself. You just feel like, I don't know what to do. In fact, they call me or they text me, and every time it's the same thing. They're so depressed. They're so sad. They're so struggling. And you can get to a point, if that's you, where you can kind of feel this fatigue, this compassion fatigue of, how do I help them? How do I say the same thing over and over? And I just want to say to you, if that's you here today, that your words and your availability matter now more than ever before. Even if it's the 100th or the 1,000th time, your availability to be available to them is so meaningful. Maybe when you think about your words matter, and maybe you just keep your words simple. Don't try to fix the person. Don't try to offer, you know, the exact right thing, but just maybe some simple words like, I believe in you, or I'm here for you, or I don't know how long this is going to last, but I am here in this with you. Or maybe, as I like to say, you belong here. You belong in this world. You belong in this life. And we are here. Maybe what you say to the person is, let me pray with you. And you just let God work in those moments and you just stay available to whatever God calls you to do and to say for them. I want to just close us in a time of prayer. So if you would bow your head and if you would pray with me, please. Father God, I thank you so much for this story of this real life of Elijah and how you brought him through this deep, dark, this cave of depression. And God, we can start to think that what we need is we need this fire from heaven, and what we need is this earthquake and this violent wind to shake us. And what we really need is we need your whisper. We need your still, small voice. And so God, I would just pray for anyone here today and anyone within the sound of my voice, if they've been struggling with their feelings and their thoughts and their sadness, God, that they, in this moment, would just reach out. And that, God, you would be there for them, that you would offer them, as you did for Elijah, just a place of healing, a place of rest. You'd even offer them a good meal and just a time to then get moving in the direction of wherever you've called them in this life. God, I pray for anyone here that's hurting and just they feel like they're out of options, that they need to know that they matter to you and that they belong here in this life. God, I pray for those who are just providing care and comfort. God, that you would come alongside of those who are fatigued and feeling like they're out of options to help people around them, that you would just pour into them more compassion and more gentleness and certainly more patience. God, I pray that you would work in each one of our hearts and that we would be the church where real healing happens. It's all because of you. It's in Christ's name we pray. Amen.